We're going to start off with Senator Tomassoni's bill. Welcome to the committee, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for putting us up first. Mr. Cervenek has to get back up to the range in rainy weather to see his son play basketball, right?
That's right.
And I told him that I regret the time that I missed my kid shutting out Greenway and playing goalie, so I think he should get back home and watch his kid play, because I still regret not going to that game.
Senator Tomassoni, I got part of that, but you need to pull that microphone a little bit closer.
I told him I think it's very important he gets home to see his kid, because I missed one of my son's games when he shut out Greenway in high school hockey, and I regret not having been to that game. So I think he should get home if he can.
Yeah, exactly.
That's anyway, important. Mr. Chairman and committee, thank you for hearing Senate File 400. This is about the Mountain Iron Economic Development Authority and a wind project that we're in the process of trying to do on the Iron Range. It's about 10 megawatts of power, and the reason we need the legislation is because it's not being done within the community of Mountain Iron. Mountain Iron has the rights to do this on some property that is a couple sections of land that the county owns and DNR owns. And in order to do this outside of the Mountain Iron city limits, we have to have this legislation to allow for a limited liability corporation. And I think that's probably it in a nutshell, but I'll have Mr. Cervenek just give you what's going on in the down and dirty on the bill.
Welcome, Mr. Cervenek?
That's correct.
All right, thank you. If you just, introduce yourself for the record, and we'll hear your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. My name is Gary Cervenek, and I represent the Mountain Iron Economic Development Authority. And Mountain Iron is a community on the Mesaba Iron Range, roughly 3,000 people in size. And they have been putting a significant amount of resources over the last 2 years into developing their own seabed wind project. The city has, the EDA has an anemometer that's been up since May 28th that's collecting data on a location called Embarrass Mountain, which is outside of the city limits of Mountain Iron. And that's where we would like to develop a wind project. It's about 9.5 megawatts in size, roughly 6 to 8 turbines. And we have a lease agreement from St. Louis County Tax Forfeited Land for the site, and we're negotiating with the DNR for another section of land. We believe that we need this statute changed to allow Mountain Iron to, in fact, its EDA, lease land outside of the city limits for one reason, and then the second reason is to form a limited liability corporation. Under Minnesota law, the EDA can form a limited liability partnership, but under the seabed statute, a qualifying owner should be a LLC, a limited liability corporation. And so we'd like to have the ability to form an LLC for the Mountain Iron EDA so we can take advantage of potential federal tax credits through the federal production tax credit for renewable energy. Those are the two purposes of the act that are before you.
Thank you, Mr. Cervenek. I might ask you just two questions. For is there anyone else, or has this been done before anywhere else in the state, first of all? And secondly, is there you have a partner in this as well, as financial partner?
Mr. Chairman, members, I'm not aware of it being done by an EDA anywhere else in the state of Minnesota. And then the second answer is we currently do not have a partner. We have a memo of understanding with Minnesota Power on the project. They helped fund the initial wind research that we did in conjunction with the state agency, the IRRRB. And as we move forward, we may seek a partner for selling off the tax credits, and that's the nature of the act here.
Members, do we have any questions?
Mr. Chair?
Senator Prentner-Solon.
Senator Tomassoni or Mr. Cervenek, this is the second piece of legislation in the last few meetings in which it appears that some public entity is getting, and I'm a co-author on this bill, and I did do support it, but certainly it's a policy issue for us to decide it appears that a public entity is getting into competition with private industry. And so I think it's something we need to think seriously about when we make decisions like this, and just how far-reaching that should be. And also the fact then, of course, your partner will have the tax credits and also, I'm assuming, be able to sell the energy tax-free.
Mr. Cervenek, please.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Pretner Solon, two significant issues you raised. The first is community-based ownership. That was addressed, I think, by the committee when they, I believe it was at least 2 years ago, allowed political subdivisions of the state of Minnesota to be qualifying owners of wind projects. And so because we would be a political subdivision of the state, and the purpose, I believe, of the seabed legislation was to try to push more of the economic benefits of renewable projects to local property owners, Minnesota residents, citizens. That's the purpose that we're seeking, is to drive some of those benefits back to, you know, the local community to invest in economic development projects. So I think there's a good public purpose that the legislature considered to make us eligible for the project. So I think under current law, we're already eligible. This allows us to lease land outside of our area, number one. Number two is to potentially take advantage of the federal tax credits. On the federal tax credit, it's a federal production tax credit. It's roughly 2 cents per kilowatt hour right now, and the recent economic stimulus package is converting part of that into a direct grant to entities that don't have a tax appetite like ours. So potentially we have a choice of either monetizing the tax credits and selling it off to a partner, or taking a 30% grant of the total construction cost for the project in lieu of the federal production tax credits. So it wouldn't exempt us from Minnesota tax. This change would allow us to take advantage of federal incentives for renewable energy, and I think that's the direct purpose. We would be selling at wholesale to a utility, hopefully in Minnesota, the product. We have no intention of selling at retail.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Pretner-Solon.
Mr. Cervenek, could you repeat that? You're selling on the grid? You're not selling it yourself or utilizing it by the city of Mountain Iron?
Mr. Cervenek.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Pretner-Solon. Yes, we have no intention to distribute and sell at retail to our own customers in Mountain Iron. Mountain Iron has its own city, municipal, public utilities, and currently they're under contract. They buy at wholesale from Minnesota Power and then distribute it at retail to its customers. But we have no intention of that. The project will not move forward unless we find a wholesale customer to sell the electrical output. We're basically creating a factory to sell electrons at wholesale.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions from members?
Chair?
Senator Senjum.
Mr. Chair, and to the witness, just again trying to understand a little bit, many cities, mine included, as a public utility, and they sell wholesale electricity. But in this case, the advantage is for the federal tax credit and maybe for the ability to locate or some, let's see, what does it say? Something about land outside of the city limits. But the federal tax credit is probably the key that makes this a good idea as opposed to just having a public utility.
Mr. Cervenek.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, the project could not economically proceed unless we had the federal tax credit.
Okay.
The federal tax credit is such a huge amount that our utility, and it's not a utility, our EDA would not be able to compete with other producers, and we would not be able to sign a power purchase agreement unless we had that credit.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I was just trying to get my hand on that. It's Senator Pretner-Solon, I think, alluded to my bill that was up earlier this last week. Again, with intent, does it have to have specific language in terms of whether you are indeed going to sell to retail or wholesale. It's a little struggle that I'm having with my own bill and developing a wind project cooperative with some school districts, and I was just wondering, is that going to be required? Maybe it's a question for the committee, because we're trying to get a hold of this in my own bill. You know, we know the intent of my own particular bill, but we are seeming to have it written into the particular statute. So I'm just trying to get a handle on intent or actual language.
And I don't know myself on that. I think this is going back to the seabed language, if I'm not mistaken, right? No? So I don't know, as far as the legislation you're referring to, where does that come in as far as retail versus wholesale? Mr. Cervenek.
Mr. Chairman, because we're not a utility. A utility is not developing this project. A municipal utility is not. A public utility is not. It's an EDA, and we're solely developing the project to sell at wholesale.
We'll have Mr. Fuller address this a little bit, too, as well.
Mr. Chairman, members, Senator Dahl, what the utilities are concerned with is that they have an exclusive service territory and a monopoly right to sell and serve and an obligation to serve customers in that area. And so their concern is that if a generator arrives, are they authorized or are they not authorized to sell at retail? And we have a haphazard record on that, I would say, although it hasn't been that many occasions. When the counties came in, I think it was last year, there was language in it, and they had some power to deal with and acquire generation. There was language that said they could not sell at retail. And the question is, do we need that, or does the exclusive service territory law already override that? I think, in their opinion, they're more comfortable with making it explicit that no, you can't sell at retail. And the reason for that is understandable. They have an obligation to serve, and they have to have sufficient generation assets, and they lose customers. Well, the per unit charge to their customer would have to go up to cover those fixed costs, because they would have fixed costs that weren't sort of in service, so because somebody else was serving them. So that's the issue. And so the question is, do we need it? Well, the utility company, the language that says you can't sell at retail, and if this doesn't contravene the exclusive service territory, they think they're more comfortable if we have it. You know, if the intent is not to sell at retail, then, you know, sort of the question is, what's the problem, I suppose, if it makes it clear. But so that's the issue. It's an exclusive service territory law and loss of customer type of issue to utilities who have the obligation to serve.
Senator Dahl, does that answer your question?
Well, Mr. Chair, then I don't want to add. I'd love to support this, but I hope that the rules are going to be the same for a similar bill that will be coming. It's now on the table for the co-op that's generated or being developed with the school districts. There's a lot of similarities in the bill. And Mr. Chair, and we are working on those. We're working with the utility companies and the school board associations and Mr. Fuller on trying to rectify that.
Okay. Senator Thomas Warner?
Chair, a couple of things. First of all, this project doesn't go forward unless they have a utility company that's going to buy the power. And so it's obviously going to be wholesale power that they're going to be buying, and they're not going to be competing with anybody else. Second thing, if the committee feels more comfortable putting in the amendment, I'm fine with that also. I don't think the amendment's necessary because this is not going to be sold at retail, but I don't have a problem if people feel more comfortable with an amendment saying that the power can't be sold at retail because they're not going to do that anyway.
Okay. Senator Rummel?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Tomasoni, is there evidence that the utilities out in that area need the additional power? That there's a market for additional power from this cooperative?
Senator Tomasoni.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Rummel, I think there's a huge evidence of it, but this is more about windmills than anything, I think,
yeah.
And it's about the seabed. And so trying to develop it here, and the reason the legislation is here is only because of the fact that it's not being developed within the city limits of Mountain Iron. Otherwise, under the seabed legislation, they'd be able to do it if it weren't. And part of the issue is putting windmills in a spot where there's wind. And so that's why it's not inside the city limits.
Senator Dibble? No? Are there any other questions from the members? Senator Prettner-Solomon.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, that does raise a number of issues. You know, if it hadn't come to us for that designation of LLC, it would have gone forward without our even thinking about it. So, you know, maybe it's the statute we need to revisit at some point. But I'm wondering if I may ask Senator Kevendall a question. Whether or not you have that language worked out in your bill yet.
Senator Dahl.
Senator Prettner-Solomon, no, we are still in discussion with the energy companies, with Mr. Fuller and the Minnesota School Board Association and the president and vice president of the cooperative. We'd hoped to have something this even tomorrow, perhaps, but we may even have to delay that till next week.
Okay.
And Senator Prettner-Solomon?
Mr. Chair and Mr. Fuller, so are these the same issues, or the issue with Senator Kevendall's bill is that they do want the option to sell at retail, is that correct?
Mr. Fuller.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Prettner-Solomon, there were a couple of issues, but yeah, the issue that the utilities brought in is they were concerned that there wasn't a provision in the bill restricting their ability to sell it at retail. What complicates it is it's an amendment to an existing law that does not have that provision, and they're looking for some other authority. So this is like, you know, it's like a takeaway in a union deal. I mean, they have a law that lets them do it. It doesn't restrict it. Now they're coming in with a bill that they want to be able to aggregate it for a particular project, and I don't know. Anyway, it's raised the level of concern about the need for a prohibition on retail sale. And the same issue still applies. Do you need that? I think the utilities feel more comfortable. We do have an exclusive service territory. But I suppose you could sell it into another service territory. That's maybe why they want it. So, and then there were some other issues with that bill as well.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Prettner-Solomon.
Mr. Fuller, if I'm hearing you correctly, then really it would be a redundancy to add anything to this bill along those lines.
Mr. Chairman, no, I don't think it's a redundancy because I think there's an uncertainty, and particularly if you're selling it outside the service territory. I mean, and if they don't intend to do that, I suppose there's no harm in doing it. If the desire of the committee is to make absolutely sure that they're not going to sell it at retail, then you'd be advised to put that in the bill.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Prettner-Solomon.
I think this warrants a meeting at some time to discuss this policy issue. But for the time being, I'm wondering if, as long as they're not planning on selling at retail, if it would be okay if we just add an amendment that says that, and I'll need your help on this, Mr. Fuller, that may not be sold at retail.
Mr. Chair. Senator Prettner-Solomon.
Senator Thomas-Solomon.
I might have something here in front of me if you want to see it. I don't know if you need copies or what.
You were prepared for
just in case.
Just in case.
If everybody feels more comfortable, I have something here, but you probably have to get. And all it says is that it can't be sold at retail and it won't change the service area. So I'm more than happy to have it on the bill.
And Mr. Chair.
Senator Prettner-Solomon.
And Senator Thomasoni, you let us go on and on about it?
Well, if I tell you it's not going to be sold at retail, I'm convinced it's not going to be sold at retail, so I didn't think we needed the amendment. And if the committee feels more comfortable with the amendment, I'm fine putting the amendment on.
Okay. Some comfort language. Senator Dahl.
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to clarify that for the record, the bill that I brought forward, there was no intention of selling retail for that school cooperative either. They were going to connect directly to the grid as well, but it was their concerns was within the schools that if they wanted maybe to sell from one school to the other within the cooperative itself or the 14 schools, I think that was a concern that the utilities might have had, just for clarification.
Okay, thank you. Passing out this amendment at this time. Is there any other questions from members?
Mr. Chair, if you want me to, I'll read the amendment while it's being passed.
Senator Thomasoni.
So the members can hear it. It says a board individually or acting jointly may not sell, transmit, or distribute the electrical energy at retail or provide for end use of the electrical energy to an off-site facility. Nothing in this subdivision modifies the exclusive service territories or exclusive right to serve as provided in sections 216B.37 to 216B.43.
Thank you, Senator Thompson. I think we'll have Mr. Fuller look it over and see about how we can make sure it conforms right to your language. You might have a couple of suggestions. Any thoughts from members on this language?
Mr.
Senator Prentner-Solon.
Well, Mr. Chair, I was going to offer the amendment, but I guess I would have to move the bill first before offering the amendment.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. I will move the bill.
Senator Prentner-Solon moves Senate file number 249. Oh, excuse me. Senate file 400. I'm looking at the wrong number here. Any questions? Any questions or comments from the committee members? Ready to go? All your members? All right. Do you want to move the amendment first?
Okay. The amendment. But okay. Do we need the language for the amendment?
Yes, we have it finished. So okay. I'll have Mr. Fuller go through that.
Mr. Chairman, members, it's a simple amendment. This bill was drafted, I think, to Senator Dahl's bill, and so there's not a board or a joint board involved in this, so that's all we have to do. So on line 1.2, it would be a project authorized by this section, and you'd strike the words, I can't read it, board, on the rest of the line after and so it will read, a project authorized by this section may not. It reads exactly the same down to 1.5. You just delete the word subdivision and put in, I think it's a section. Yeah, this section. So those are two changes. You strike the language on line 2 after and insert project authorized by this section. And then on 1.5, you strike subdivision or delete it and put in section. And I think that does it.
Well, then, Mr. Chair.
Senator Prentner-Solon.
I would offer the oral amendment as Mr. Fuller has stated it.
Okay. Senator Prentner-Solon moves the amendment to Senate File 400 as given to us by Mr. Fuller. Questions? All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. And Senator Prentner-Solon renews her. Well, before we do that, I guess, is there anyone in the audience that would like to speak for or against this particular bill as amended? Once again, any other discussion? And Senator Prentner-Solon again renews her motion to move Senate File 400 to pass and go on to business, industry, and jobs.
As amended.
As amended. Any questions or comments? All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passes.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Senjum.
Could we ask Senator Thomasoni in the future to get a little more ink in his printer?
Those are part of the cutbacks, I think, this year. Senator Scogin. Welcome to the committee.
To my committee and everything. We had milk day.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Welcome.
Committee, before you have Senate File 316. A pretty simple explanation. It is a wind power generator credit. We talk a lot about renewables. We talk a lot about green jobs. And in greater Minnesota, there are companies and organizations that are now working on opening the door for the small wind generators, the people who want to put a wind turbine back in their home or their small business. They need some help to get there. They are not cheap, and as a result, the federal government has started to open the door a little bit with a tax credit, And I'm here today proposing that we as a state also allow those who put up small wind generators to get a tax credit to help them pay for it. And I have a couple of people who are with me today to talk about the need for that and how it might affect their business or the business of people that they represent. And so the bill is before you, pretty easy to read, pretty easy to understand. And I'll introduce, I think we'll start with Dan Matfield. He is the general manager of Residential Wind Power Incorporated. It comes out of my district up in the New York Mills Perham area. They've been in the business for about 3 years, but I'll let Mr. Matfield tell his story, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Matfield, welcome to the committee. Please again state your name for the record and go ahead. Thank you.
Thank you. My name is Dan Matfield. I'm a general manager for a company in New York Mills called Residential Wind Power Incorporated. Our main focus is to sell and install small wind generation turbines to residences, small business, farms, basically all the little people around, not large units like you see with that stand 200 feet tall. These are just small units between 2 and 10 kilowatts that produce, in some cases, enough to run a home or just to subsidize and make their electricity bills cheaper. The main focus of this bill is to provide either a tax credit or maybe a rebate of some sort to anyone who purchases one of these units to make it a little easier and more affordable for them to do that in this time of more higher energy costs, and as well as to allow our business to succeed and grow, and hopefully if something like this were to pass with the interest that we've seen so far, with some sort of an incentive program for these residential homeowners, you're looking at a very distinct possibility of creating several jobs in just our company alone. And I know there are other small wind companies out there that would benefit as well from the same in the same ways that we do.
Mr. Matfield, I was just self-curious on this. You said one of your units could power up to a household worth of electricity.
Correct.
And
depending upon the size turbine that you purchase and wind availability in your area.
Okay. Now that's when the wind is blowing.
Right.
Okay. And so there would still be a need at times to be connected to the grid.
Oh, absolutely. That's the units that we sell are all interconnected with the power companies. Okay. So that if that turbine, if it's a nice, beautiful, calm summer day, you know, you're going to be drawing power from the utility. If on a day when there's substantial wind and your home usage is low and you're actually producing more than your home's using, it will backfeed the grid, and the power companies owe the residents a credit on their account, at which is based by Minnesota state law, as they have to pay back or credit the customer for what they provided the utility at average retail rate.
Yeah. And your net metering.
Exactly.
And one other thing, Mr. Matfield, in looking forward as we try to get more distribution out there and look at more renewable sources, I've sometimes in the conversations, the direction has been, do we want to go with all this distributed energy or production and how it ties into the grid? I mean, if we get, I don't know how many of these units you sell or would have a potential to sell in a year, but if we start getting 10,000 of these units out there, is it going to create a problem with management of the grid, with going back and forth with net metering, or is that not a problem?
No, I don't believe so, because the technology that the utilities use nowadays, you don't have the same style of meter anymore. You know, it's easy to read, it's easy to determine, it's all digital. They read what you use from them, what you send back to the power company, and it's simple mathematics. It's easy to do the power companies that we've worked with so far, being Otter Tail Power and Lake Region Electric Cooperative, have been very helpful and very willing to work with us on this and in the interconnection process, and they're not giving any kind of problems or anything to the homeowners, and they're being very, very welcome to the idea.
Okay. One last question for you, Mr. Matfield. Have you discussed with the PUC their responsibility on certifying the generators, things like that?
Basically, there's not a whole lot of certification. They've got several guidelines and rules that you have to follow when interconnecting with their company. They have to come out and make sure that, you know, you put the proper disconnects that where their people can get to them and find them easily. They'll come out and make sure that for a period of 5 minutes from the time you turn them on, that they won't generate electricity immediately for safety reasons for their employees working on lines.
Okay. Maybe this is a question for Senator Scogin then, too. Point C on Section 1 is certified wind, small wind power generated means a product certified by the commission as a small wind power generator. So to credit, qualify for the credit, is there some special requirements here?
I don't really believe that there are, other than, you know, that each turbine, they have to have a UL rating, you know, be UL listed and certified by the underwriter laboratories to be efficient and safe for use.
Mr. Chair, okay. This is new. Some of this stuff is new to me as well, but I believe the PUC has said that under 100 kilowatts is considered small, and they're producing 2 to 10s.
Okay, very good. Well, thank you, Mr. Matfield. Maybe before we have any other questions, Senator Sharon, you have a question on? Maybe we could hear from Mr. Sullivan if you had some things to add, and then we'll open it up.
Sure. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Joe Sullivan. I represent Missouri River Energy Services. MRES is a municipal power agency. We serve about 24 communities in greater Minnesota. And actually, we are strongly in support of Senate File 316, Senator Scogin's bill, and then also the bill you're going to hear next, Senator Rosen's bill, Senate File 512. We like the direction of both bills a lot. We have a number of communities in Senator Rosen's and Senator Scogin's districts that we think would be benefited greatly by this type of an approach towards driving renewable energy. And we really think that what we like most about this approach is that, you know, this is a great way to get distributed generation out at the residential level. We think that the carrot as opposed to a stick approach work in an incentive-based model, so we like the carrot approach. And especially when you consider that this tax credit would be on top of the $4,000 federal tax credit, you could really see a stimulative effect that would drive, we think, significant distributed generation at the residential level. We prefer this approach to some of the other proposals you guys are going to hear about this year, specifically like the feed-in tariff. We think this is a better fit for Minnesota than a feed-in tariff. And then in closing, there's a couple ideas that I just wanted to leave you with. One of them is that I think that it would be important to look at what the possibility for using the federal stimulus monies would be as far as this with this approach. And then also, I think that it would be a good idea to look at if a utility, and I stress if a utility is working to help set up one of these residential units, I think it would be a great incentive for utilities if they could get some kind of conservation credit that they could apply to their SIP goals. So with that, thank you for the opportunity to testify, and if you have any questions, I'd be glad to answer them or attempt to.
Thank you, Mr. Sullivan. Senator Sharon.
I was just curious to know how you came to determine that the tax credit should be $1,500, or how you come to what the tax credit ought to be. It's 1,500, not to exceed 1,500. Am I on the wrong bill? No, that's Rosenthal. I'll ask same question
They're
for
very
you.
Similar. Very
similar. How do you come to the number, whatever the number is?
We took the way I came up with that number was there are other states who have a similar 30 to 35% credit. Maine is one of them, as well as I believe New Jersey. There are a couple other states too, but I just kind of looked at those to get an idea of what they were doing. And then I took 35% of the total cost of installation, and then by what, and I took 35% of what our cost or what the cost was for the customer at that time, and came up with $2,500 was approximately 35% of the cost. It's a little less than what actually 35% is.
Just to follow
Senator
up,
Sharon.
And is there a sense that that's the number that's needed to create the incentive?
We did talk to quite a few people, and a lot of them said if they could get, between $2,000 and $3,000 back, this is just customer and inquiry information that we would get by kind of doing little discussions with the people who came in interested in the product, and found that was kind of a genuine number that would work well.
And one final question.
Senator Sharon.
Did I hear you say that there are others who produce this product other than you in the state of Minnesota?
We don't produce the product. We just sell for other companies and install them. But, yes, there are other companies. There are companies in Brainerd. Now I can't even think of in Mora. There's a company. There's several here in the Twin Cities metro area.
Thank you.
You bet.
Thank you.
Other questions from Senator Ryan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Scogin, how are we going to pay for this credit?
Senator Scogin.
Well, as you can see in the bill, it's proposed to be a tax credit. I've had that conversation with our tax chairman. And in what better year to bring it forward than when we're flush with cash?
okay.
We're having that conversation. He would prefer a grant. We see the potential possibly for some green jobs legislation and maybe some economic stimulus that could fund it for a couple of years. We're looking at different possibilities. This is how it is today. Mr. Fuller pointed out, and I should tell the committee, that we're very vague on our requests of the PUC on what they're going to certify, and we need to tighten that up, and we're going to try to do that. Senator Rosen has a bill you're going to hear next. Senator Rosen and I have even had a discussion about possibly pushing our two bills together at some point and making them making the tax chair jump through the hoops again, so we're maybe going to try to make it a little easier for him to accept what we have going, and we'll tighten up the PUC stuff at that time as well.
Thank you.
Senator Dibble?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I just have like three quick observations. One is responding to Senator Rommel, various interests around here, like the governor has some tax ideas as well. So, we can have this. It's okay to have this conversation this year. That's all right. Secondly, I really liked point that you made from Missouri River about thinking about the conservation and efficiency program as well as relates to this. So as those thoughts advance, I think you should bring them forward. Love to have that conversation some more with you. And then I forgot my third point, so.
All right. We'll get back to you.
All right.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A lot of good questions have been asked. I got a couple more, I guess. On the SIP issue, so when someone is feeding the electricity into their own home and reducing their demand, then I think it would make sense to count that towards SIP potentially. But what would be the utilities part in that? I mean, would the utility be offering a rebate, or how would they be contributing to that energy savings? And then when the electricity is going back into the grid, I assume you'd probably want to count that towards your renewable energy requirements. And so what's the utility contribution to this process for a homeowner who wants to put up a turbine?
Well, the utility, was basically they're looking to their only requirement is that they come in and they make sure that everything is hooked up correctly to their system so that there are no issues. They come in and they put in the correct meter that would read both the electricity traveling in and out of the home from the turbine. And at this point in time, that's pretty much the utility's only stand on this issue.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm wondering maybe are there any rebates offered by the utilities for homeowners who want to put these turbines up by Missouri River?
Well, you know, I don't know.
Sullivan?
Mr. Chair, Senator Anderson, I don't believe that Missouri River currently has some kind of a rebate. I'd be glad to look into that. But when you were asking your questions, I was thinking of those more as those are both really good questions, and those are things that really need to be hashed out. I wrote those down, and I was going to take those back.
Okay, because I think it's an intriguing idea, but there needs to be really some utility participation in this.
Sure.
And you mentioned the feed-in tariff, and just sort of conceptually, you know, there's two different ways we could approach this. We could either use taxpayer money with a tax credit to help reduce the costs of a home for a homeowner to put wind turbines up, or we could use ratepayer contribution. And that's how a feed-in tariff would work. It would just be, you know, the cost would be spread out through the rates rather than taxpayers paying for it. So we have to really look at the different approaches and decide which one we think would make more sense as a committee. We haven't really had that discussion, but just to think about the different approaches. And let me just ask about the grid. Mr. Chair, you were asking about the interconnection, and let me just make sure we were in. Okay, if you have a 10 megawatt turbine, you've got 100 of them to make 1 megawatt, or 10 kilowatts, sorry. 100 of those is a megawatt, right? If we're
correct,
right,
yeah.
Mr.
100
Fuller,
kilowatts.
We checked our math with him.
Yeah, it would be 100 kilowatts.
So, would the, and maybe do you know Mr. Sullivan, if or maybe Mr. Is it Matt Field?
Matt Feld.
Is it these small turbines? Do they just use the local wires to and feed into the local community without having to go into? They don't have to go into big power lines, do they? So they really don't affect. They actually help the utilities with that problem of not enough transmission lines because it's,
right.
You know, you have to do some interconnection, which there may be a cost to, but
right.
It's not like you have to build those 345, you know, KV lines, is it KV?
Yep.
To carry this kind of distributed energy.
Right.
So it's
Mr. Matfield?
Senator, and the way it actually works is you just run lines from the turbine itself directly into your home, mm-hmm. where it either goes through an inverter first and then right into your breaker box, or on certain ones of ours, the inverter is built right in, so it just goes directly into the breaker box. And so any energy that feeds back, it just feeds right through the lines that already come from your house, or come to your house from the power company.
So,
Senator Anderson,
can I ask another question or two? Can you tell us about how much this would cost for a homeowner to put up a 5 or 10 kV wind turbine?
Senator, with the current units that we offer, our company specifically, you're looking at roughly for a 10 kilowatt unit. We have 2 kilowatt and we have 10 kilowatt.
Okay.
That's our base. Those are basically our two main focuses right now. For the 10-kilowatt unit, with the average-sized tower and foundations running all the lines, you're looking at approximately $33,000 to $35,000 to install one at your home.
So how long, Mr.
Senator
Chair,
Anderson?
How long would it take to pay for that for a homeowner who, by, you know, subtracting all that savings they get on their energy bill?
Right. The best
Mr.
way to
Matfield.
Look at it would be, it would would depend greatly on the wind speed in your area. You know, if you're down in the southwest corner of the state, you know, you're going to get a lot higher, a lot quicker payback than you are, say, up in the Iron Range. You know, the average is looking like about roughly 12 years to pay back.
Okay. Mr. Chair, can I just bring up one other quick
Senator
issue?
Anderson.
I've been asking Mr. Fuller for advice about the issue of how we make sure that we're trying to get more of these turbines and solar panels made in Minnesota, because if we really want to create jobs, not just for the salespeople and the guys who are operating them, but for the manufacturers. And Mr. Fuller says, the Supreme Court says, that if we're using state dollars and we're buying these, we can require that they're made in Minnesota, or at least have a preference for that. Now, if we can't necessarily just tell private developers, we can't really tell them you have to buy in Minnesota, but it's something we should think about if we're using state dollars, that we might want to put some, and it sounds like there's a lot of local makers of these, producers of these small turbines, which is great. I wasn't aware of all those companies around Minnesota, but if there's state dollars connected, we should think about having a preference for Minnesota-made products, because that way we know that we're getting the most bang for our buck for the economic stimulus and the job creation and, you know, the benefit to our communities.
That's a good point.
That's a good point.
Senator Rosen.
No, Mr. Chair, my question was answered, and that was about the grid. But I really like the point about the conservation, the SIP. I think we should look on that, and I agree with Senator Anderson as far as made in Minnesota. I think there are some great opportunities out there, mm-hmm. especially since the next wind turbine manufacturing is going in Estherville, Iowa, about 30 miles from my home. So that's going to be 6 in Iowa. I think I sent you all an article, or it's coming, about this. I'm not too happy.
Good. Senator Dibble.
Thank you. I remembered my thing, my third thing. I had another one. So, Senator Scogin, you talked about the PUC certifying a small wind power generator, that subdivision 4 on the second page. What does that mean? I'm not quite tracking what that means. Does that mean we're certifying the equipment as worthy, or we're designating the power generation as something special?
Senator Scogin, I think this
Mr.
is
Chair, like literally we're you know, certifying like an actual tangible thing, or we're certifying an activity.
Mr. Chair and Senator Dibble, that is the vagueness that mm-hmm. Mr. Fuller warned me about. And this language, most of it came from Mr. Matfield. And mm-hmm. he included that, I think, as some comfort language that we were dealing with something electrical, that we should probably include the commission somehow. And I maybe can expound on that, but that's what we need to tighten up.
So, Mr. Chair, I see the commission is in the room. So, you know, if we need to, maybe we can ask them to. So,
Mr. Matfield, I don't know.
Mr. Matfield?
Yeah, what are we doing here?
He's wondering about
wondering
right.
if we're setting
yeah,
up some
I've
sort of a
thing right here
market mechanism or an entity of some sort of for certifying equipment. So.
Right, Mr. Chair, Senator. It basically does state here that the commission may certify a product, which means the actual tangible unit itself and not the production.
Okay.
For the power generator, if the commission determines that the product provides an efficient an effective means of generating electricity for a household or small business. And I think I think we're going to find that the individual public utilities really won't have a whole lot of certifying to do with it. It'll most be the fact that it has a UL listing, mm-hmm. you know, it's UL listed and rated and for safety and efficiency. Mm-hmm. And they'll pretty much take the word of the UL mm-hmm. versus actually
okay.
getting their hands in there and certifying each individual one themselves.
So, Mr. Chair, we may not need this section. When and where are we going to figure that out? At its next stop or
Senator Scogin?
Are we hanging on to this thing? Or?
Mr. Chair and Senator Dibble, I still need to have you know, Senator Rosen and I started our conversation yesterday.
Okay.
Before we stop again, I guess, would be my guess. Okay. My promise. Or my
like Senator Tomasoni's promise. Well, I'm on tax. I assume we're going to taxes, so I'm there. So I'll keep an eye on it. Mr. Chair, if I may ask another question.
Senator Dibble.
I'm looking at generators purchased after December 31st, 2006, so it looks like we're going back a year and a couple of months, or 2 years and a couple of months. Why are we going retroactive, A and B? How many have been installed between December 31st, 2006 and today?
Mr. Matfield.
Mr. Chair, Senator, this was actually written and introduced last year at about this time, a little later in the season. So it's still going based on that. You know, that is always can be amended at any point in time. There were our company ourselves since this date effective have installed 7 units for our company. I can't speak for the other companies in the state, but like I said, that is entirely, you know, amendable that we can change to maybe the beginning of 09.
Senator Dibble.
Well, I'm sure Senator Bach will be very interested in that.
Certainly.
I won't make any motions today. So.
Senator Rosen.
If I may, when I present my bill, we've had conversations with Senator Scogin and myself, and I think what we're planning on doing is testifying jointly on one bill in front of tax committees. And there is good pieces in both bills, and I think we're just going to have a I'm not speaking out of context, am I?
No, I've tipped them off while you were out of the room.
So. Okay. Okay. So that's the plan, is to get this worked up right.
Right.
Okay. Any other questions from the committee?
Chair.
Senator Senjum.
Mr. Chair, line 1-18, as a for instance, notes that a taxpayer may not claim and actually the taxpayer is used up in 1.14. My question, though, is would it be the case that if you had the land, a household may have a number of taxpayers, and any one taxpayer within that household, or for that matter, I guess wouldn't even have to be in that household, could take advantage of that of this tax credit? I mean, is this like for an infinite number of households? I mean, we normally would probably think of one turbine per property, but if you went recruiting taxpayers, I suppose that anybody could be a recipient of this tax credit if they wanted to participate in buying a $35,000 windmill.
Senator Senjum, I think the next stop is tax committee for this. Maybe that's a question they would answer more appropriately than our policy committee.
And Mr. Chair, I happen to be on that with Mr. Dibble. Senator Dibble, we can ask that.
Senator
Prettner-Solin.
Senator Senjum, it also indicates that a credit may only be taken for one wind power generator on line 1.19.
Mr. Chair and Senator Solon,
Senator Senjum.
I assume that was one wind turbine per taxpayer. As for instance, with children at home, it wouldn't be inconceivable. I suppose you could have 4 taxpayers in a household.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you. That's a good catch. So just as you move on towards the tax committee, I'm guessing those questions will be asked. The other thought that occurs to me, I had a bill similar to this once, and I was the experience of Arizona once was shared with me, in which a tax credit was given for conversions or allowing automobiles to be converted to mixed fuels. And so everyone ran over to their mechanic and had this thing stuck on their car, whether or not they used the fuel, and it broke the bank. And so they had to go into special session and kind of cap out the program. So that's something you might want to think about as well. I mean, I don't know if we're going to have a run on these things and it's going to break the bank, but maybe to have some, you know, upper limit in mind, you know, capping out the program so that we have a little more fiscal predictability.
Thank you.
And my thought is that, I mean, as from this committee's standpoint, if we've got a certain amount of money that we're working with to move forward these projects, are we better off in this more distributive, you know, production or generation, or do we want to look at money that goes into wind farms? Are we going to get more back from that? Or do we want to put the money into the more SIP programs, looking at those avenues? I mean, so some sort of level, you know, I don't know if that's for our committee to determine, but, you know, there's obviously a limited pile of money to work with, and where do we put our emphasis on these things? Obviously, this is a good idea, but I don't know if we, you know, where we determine how much money should be spent on it. Do you have some thoughts on that, Senator Dibble?
I'll think a little more, Mr. Chair.
Is there anyone else in the, thank you all, but is anyone else in the room that wants to comment for or against this bill? Okay. Any further discussion from members or questions?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Sparks.
And I would move that Senate File 316 be recommended to pass. And does it have to go anywhere before tax committee?
Mm-hmm.
Sent to the tax committee? Nowhere else before that?
Nope.
We refer to the tax committee.
Senator Sparks moves that Senate File 316 be recommended to pass and re-refer to the tax committee. Any questions, comments? All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? The motion carries.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, committee.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you very much.
Senator Rose, welcome. This, I think we probably covered most of the questions up front, so this one should go pretty easily.
It should go fairly easy, Mr. Chair. Thank you very much, and members of the committee. Senate File 512 is very similar to Senator Scogin's bill, and he did a very good job of teeing up the whole issue. I do believe this is a whole new market, and I'm glad we're having this discussion about the direction that we want to take renewable energy. And this is an area that has gotten a lot of attention in my Senate district. Some of you were able to come down to my area to visit the large wind farms. But there's so much more potential here. Senator Scogin's bill talks about the households. I think more attention was put on the households. But you have to remember, a small business out in greater Minnesota is agriculture. And we have a lot of hog setup units out there that could utilize something like this. So they're the ones that are asking, agriculture is asking for this opportunity to put up these individual wind turbines. And I think it's a great idea if we can just make this work. And I'm hoping there is some money in that federal stimulus package that perhaps we can put off into a pool and work within those realms. If I could, Mr. Chair and Senator Prittner-Solon, just point out some of the differences between the two bills. And as Senator Scogin said, apparently I was out of the room, but we are going to be working together to come up with one good bill that has maybe a fighting chance in tax committee. Senator Scogin's bill goes up to no more than 10 kilowatts. Mine goes up to 100 kilowatts, which is the federal standard. And his is at $2,500 of a tax credit. Mine's $1,500. The reason it's $1,500, because when I was talking to Jan Jewell about this project, he just said $1,500. And so I said $1,500 is fine. But, of course, we all know the federal tax credit is $4,000. I believe it could be more than that, and I'm very excited about talking about increasing that. I think that's an area that we need to look at that gives the incentive to go ahead and make this leap, combining it with the federal tax credit. So $2,500, I think, is very reasonable. I do have just a couple of amendments I would like to, a voice amendment. On line 1.8, my bill talks about a small wind energy property placed in service. And after service, I'd like to say in the state of Minnesota during the taxable year. I'd like to move that oral amendment, Mr. Chair.
Senator Rosen moves that oral amendment. Any questions, comments? All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And some of the other changes are, I think Senator Scogin spilt gears more towards the installation of a certified small wind power unit. Mine is more just the unit itself, and he's talking more about the installation. So, and of course, the carryover provision or the credit is much different than Senator Scogin's, and that's where I think his will probably have more of a fiscal note than mine will. Mine is carried over for over 5 years, and five taxable years. So, I've been told that it may not have as much of a fiscal unit or fiscal cost to it. And then, of course, as Senator Dibble picked up, Senator Scogin starts in 06 and mine starts of December 31st of 08, which mirrors the federal tax policy already. So,
and yours actually has an end date?
And mine has the end date, which is the same as the federal's 2016. So that is the difference. I do have Mr. Bill Richmond from Ion Renewable Technology that would like to testify real briefly. And he could also, Mr. Chair, members, talk about some of the solar aspects of combining these two renewable projects.
Okay. Mr. Richmond, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you. It's Bill Richmond with Ion Renewable Technology and Ion Electric. We're based here in Minneapolis.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Well, as she has said, we deal with solar and wind technology, and there is a lot of things going on in the renewables, obviously, and there is a timeline between them too, as they are going together hand in hand. I really believe that what she's doing here is the correct thing in trying to establish some sort of credit. How we can do it, that's kind of up to these guys and up to you people as well. As a guy that's an electrical field and the electrical industry, I can tell you how it all works and put it all together if you have any questions on that.
Well, actually, I did have a question. And this, being that this is a larger unit, it's 100 megawatts versus the 10, and we talked about it before, that you know you could be a little more not have to be more local, and you wouldn't necessarily tie it to the grid. But if this being a larger unit, I mean, what effect does that have on the grid?
The 100 kW units are. Is in a small scale really the biggest of the best. When you go to the next, it's 2.25 kW, and on the effect of the grid, it really has a it produces a lot of power. There's a lot of kW hours involved in that thing, and when it's running, it probably runs about 80 to 90 amps worth of power through it. So that's a significant amount of power developed by that unit.
Okay.
So if you're looking at a 2 kW or a 10 kW unit, it's a lot more time involved in those as opposed to 100 kWs.
But it's certainly not going to create any kind of instability issues or overpowering certain parts of the grid.
No, it doesn't require a substation or an interconnect at all. They go right to, you know, you can go right through your metering.
Okay.
Your standard meters.
Thank you. Other questions? Senator Rummel.
Just thank you, Mr. Chair. Picking up on something Senator Anderson said earlier, does this affect the transmission lines being 100 kilowatts, or is it still below that?
Below that.
Mr. Richmond, I'm sorry.
That's below that by far.
Okay. I one other follow-up question, if I may. We had heard the cost of a 10K kilowatt. Is this is obviously not 10 times as much to do it. Is there an average price for one of these units?
It generally goes to about $3,000 a kW, so it's about $300,000 to one
of them. What was it? 10 times
more. It is. Yeah. It's not they're not a little cheap thing.
Right.
There's a significant amount of structure that goes to these. You have to have a lot of cement and a lot of a crane that's going to cost you in the neighborhood of $50,000 just to get to the site and put it up. So it's like big wind turbines. It really is. It's close. Sure.
Senator Rosen. The reason we did settle on not more than 100 kilowatts is just to mirror the federal guidelines. I think there is a lot of area, a lot of potential of growth below that in the 10 to 20 kilowatt area. And so that's why I think Senator Scogin and my bill can be.
Senator Rosen, on this, you know, if on Senator Scogin's bill, we got a $2,500 credit for a $30,000 unit and a $1,500 credit for a $300,000. It's much of an incentive there. I mean, even if we went up to $2,500, is that going to be any kind of an incentive for someone who has to come up with $300,000 to put up a turbine?
Well, Mr. Chair, I just don't think you're going to see mom and pop putting up the $300,000 one. You know, they're going to put up the tens. They're going to get 40% efficiency or 38% efficiency, and they're going to stay on the grid and use it when they can and feel good about that. And this is going to be an opportunity for them to do that.
Mr. Chair, I was just trying to match it with the federal guidelines, but as Senator Scogin says, I think the 10 kilowatt is the direction you're going to see utilization out in where we need to have it.
Senator Rummel?
Senator Dahl. And Senator Rosen, would some of those farmers use the larger units,
Senator Rosen.
Farmers? Or?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Rummel. I believe they would, perhaps if they developed a limited.
So having that breadth between the 10 and the 100 would be useful for the different possible uses out there.
Senator Rummel, it certainly doesn't limit you. This keeps the bill open to some other possibilities out there.
Senator Pretner Solomon.
Seem like dumb questions, Mr. Chair, but I'm going to ask them anyways. How much energy does a facility use? That, like a home or a large farm or ranch or? Well, in what neighborhood? Is there something? Can somebody answer that?
Mr. Richmond.
One of the utility companies.
Could. Chairman and Senator, the average home uses about 1,100 kilowatt hours a month. That's an average 2,200 square foot house.
Okay. Right?
That's not really an average house because they consider an average house as 900 square feet. But the people that can afford a 10 kW is about 2,200, which a 10 kW unit pretty much handles a vast majority of their power that they consume.
And Mr. Chair, did I understand you correctly, Mr. Richmond, when you said that? Let me back up. So my understanding is that this would be used primarily for the operation of the home or the farm or whatever. But is there a potential? I don't understand this. You said it didn't need transmission lines, that it could go right through the meter. Is it possible for it to flow through beyond the meter to back to the grid or something like that?
Mr. Richmond.
Mr. Chair and Senator, the net metering laws in Minnesota are 40 kW or less. That means that any wind turbine, any solar system can be put up at 40 kW or less and go back through the meter that you have existing on your building or house. They would supply the utility supplies a separate meter, totally digitized for just for that purpose. It goes back and it goes forth. So generally for wind power is generally at night, and that's in primarily in the wintertime, believe it or not. And that is the good thing for the utility because now it creates their load shifting that they have to do. So it's a great thing for them to have. And the meter for them is another good thing because it goes right back to the grid and generally at night nobody's using consuming power, so it's generating power back to the grid, and they're being able to load shift that energy somewhere else down the lines, and it doesn't matter what power line that they're working with in this case.
Senator Prentice-Holland?
Mr. Richman, I don't understand that load shift. I understand that that you won't be needing it, and so it's going on the grid, but actually that's a low consumption time for the power company too, isn't it?
Mr. Richman?
Correct, but that energy can be generated all the way down the line. It doesn't matter if it starts in New York Mills and ends up in Fairmont, and that's a fact.
So whatever you're not using, Mr. Chair and Mr. Richman, whatever you're not using is sold back to the company or you're getting credit for it?
That's correct.
Oh, thank you.
On the same thought, though, you mentioned 40K is kind of the cap. If we got 100K, what are we doing there? What are we when you're generating that kind of electricity?
I'd like to see that upped. And I think Dan Jewell would agree with me that to put that up to 100 kW, and that's done in several other states.
Okay.
Net metering would be great up to 100 kW.
So it's simply a matter of the statute limitation, not a technical or physical limitation that we can't do that.
Okay. It's just a statute limit.
Okay. All right. Any other questions, members? Anyone else want to address? Senator Olsen, I'm sorry.
Thank you. I'm curious, does any of the systems, do they have like battery backups, you know, or battery systems where you can, I've seen some of these systems where the wind generator will charge a battery system, and do you offer that as part of your line of?
Mr. Richman.
Senator and Chair, we presently have off-grid systems and with a small wind. And in the large wind, most of the time you don't have that. However, Xcel Energy does have a large 1-megawatt battery in Laverne right now at present that is very instrumental to them, and they're trying to find out what that will take them or where this will take them in the future. We are presently working with a company in California that also offers a battery storage technology, and we'll hopefully be able to get that out within the next year.
There's no other comments or questions. Anyone wants to testify? Oh, yes, Lauren.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Lauren Lotuck from Otter Tail Power. Just a point of clarification, I want to underscore something Mr. Richman said. Up to 40 kW, the statute requires that the utility do net metering. That means we pay at full retail up to 40 kilowatts. From 40 to 100, the generator would fall under what we call PURPA, or the Public Utilities Regulatory Policy Act, which means that we would pay them at our avoided cost, which would be something like 3 cents a kilowatt hour, maybe even 2 cents a kilowatt hour. Each utility files a avoided cost tariff with the commission each year. So the amount being offered to small producers above 40 kW would be much less than from 0 to 40. So I just want to make that clarification for everyone.
Okay. Thank you very much. Appreciate that.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Rosen.
I realize this is a moving target. And there is a lot of area of negotiation, and perhaps it could all change if something comes in that federal stimulus package that we'll have to meet again and redefine it. But at least we're moving forward on some, I think, very creative ideas. So. Okay. I would move that Senate File 512 be recommended to pass and be referred to taxes.
Senator Rosen moves
as
that
amended.
Senate File 512 be recommended to pass as amended and referred to the Committee on Taxes. Questions? All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion is carries.
And thank you,
referred
members.
To taxes. Committee on Taxes. That's it for our bills today, but our next meeting is Thursday, and we will be discussing the greenhouse gas reduction report from the PCA and the Office of Energy Security, along with their legislative proposals. So we'll adjourn until that time.